Support for WILL comes from Busey. With more than 145 years of experience, Busey understands the benefits healthy businesses provide the local economy. Proudly partnering with the business community since 1868. Busey, your dream, our promise.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of December 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, will be here to help look at the cash grain market. We'll take an in-depth look at the weather forecast, too. In fact, we'll do it a little earlier than usual because I talked to him for much longer than normal with Mike Tenorit. T-storm weather in Chicago, Illinois. It's all about the El Nino in South America and, in fact, right here in our part of the world, too. And we'll hear all about it during today's edition of the Closing Market Report for this Thursday afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here's the way the numbers finished up on this Thursday afternoon. Nearby corn, that's the December contract, up 5.5 cents, $3.77 at a quarter, the settlement price. The March at $3.79 at a quarter, up 5.5 in May. A nickel higher at $3.84 at a quarter, July $3.88 and three quarters, up 4.5. December of next year at $3.99 and a quarter, 3.75 of a cent higher. Soy complex was up too. January contract, a penny and a half higher, $8.78 and a quarter. The March at $8.81 and a quarter, up 1.5. The May at 887.5, a penny and three quarters higher. July at 894, up 1.75. And the November beans at 898.75, 3.25 higher for 2016. Bean meal down $4.60 at $274.20. Bean oil 65 cents higher at $31.51. Soft red winter wheat, December contract $4.84.5, up 6.5. July, the harvest month, up a nickel at $5.05. July in the hard red at $5.10.25, up 8.25. Feeder cattle in the January contract at $152.25 finished or currently trading rather up $1.57.5, and the February live cattle at $1.26.25 up $1.90. February lean hogs at $59.32.5 are 7.5 cents higher on the afternoon. The April there at $63.35 up a dime. Next week I'll be on the road with the Illinois Farm Economic Summits right here in Champaign at the I Hotel on Monday, and then Tuesday will be in Peoria at the Civic Center and Verandas in DeKalb on Wednesday, and Thursday will be in Springfield. I suppose that's in the Crown Plaza, but I don't quite remember, and then down at the Holiday Inn in Mount Vernon on Friday. So we kind of hope to see you while we're on the road next week.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Checking up on some of the outside markets at this hour. January crude oil at $36.74 a barrel, down 42 cents. Ethanol futures at $1.46.5. They're a tenth of a cent higher. Gasoline on the RBOB, $1.28. And they're up 4.8 cents of a cent on the wholesale price of gas. January contract for the bean or for the heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.22.3 is a penny and a half lower. And natural gas at $2 a penny and a half, down 4.7 cents of a cent. The Dow is up 202 points at 17,658. The US dollar at 97.94. That's up 0.611. And gold futures on the day are down $4.50 at $1,072 even. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area tonight. Partly cloudy, a low of 39 degrees. A west-southwest wind at 7 to 11, gusting to 15. On Friday, a 20% chance of showers after noon. Mostly cloudy, a high of 58 degrees. Southeast winds at 7 to 13, gusting to 16. And Friday evening, a 30% chance of a shower or two before midnight. Cloudy, a low of 53. Again, south winds, they'll turn to the southwest at 14, gusting as high as 18. And Saturday, a 30% chance of showers after the noon hour. Mostly cloudy and a high of 66 degrees on Saturday. Southwest winds at 11 to 14, gusting to 18. Saturday night, showers are likely, that coming after midnight. Cloudy and a low of just 58 degrees in December. 60% chance of precipitation. More on the weather at the bottom of the half hour.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, joined by Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, to talk a little bit about the marketplace. Dan, thanks for being with us this afternoon. I know you said 80 in your shop, maybe today, but I think 60 may be more impressive, or 66 may be far more impressive on a Saturday here in the state of Illinois at mid-December. Just unusual weather, and I'm wondering about some other unusual events that have been happening, and I want to know what your thoughts really are on the energy markets. Crude oil in particular is making these new lows. Hasn't been down this deep for a long time. And it looks like the spigot's just going to be wide open out of the OPEC nations for quite some time. You occasionally mention deflation. I don't know whether that's something you want to talk about today, or there are other, or if this is just a depressing weight on the marketplace, or maybe if it doesn't have much to do with the rest of the commodities at all.
Well, it does have something to do with maybe a deflation, or it has had, because we've had a pretty strong run in the dollar. Basically, crude oil is priced in dollar terms. So anytime you get a stronger dollar, basically that means you can buy more barrels of oil with it. So therefore, you know, oil prices go down. But basically, I think the oil thing is definitely driven by the Mideast. It's driven by the so-called Iran treaty, and people plan on expecting to see Iran come on full stream with a lot of oil to go along with all the other Mideast oil. Saudi Arabia has been going pretty well at full tilt. So we do have plenty of world oil coming at us around the world, and I think the market it probably is overdoing the expectations of what Iran will bring on into the world market. But the trend is down, and the bear has all the money, and as long as he has that, he's able to push that as low as he wants to. Now, we are definitely taking oil below cost production, so you will start seeing a lot of oil wells begin to just basically stop producing. So it is going to put a lot of pressure on the fracking industry here that we have in Texas, as well as in North Dakota, which are the two main ones. Now we've got fracking going on, you know, all over the Midwest a little bit. The two big states that's really been full throttle on fracking has been Texas and North Dakota. So that's going to put a lot of pressure on those guys with these price levels. You pretty much need, everybody will tell you a different number, but $60 to $65 to make money. If you go down underneath that, you start printing some red ink, and then if you get down underneath that, then a lot of these older wells that were brought back into production that are not very efficient, then they begin to shut down. So you will see supplies eventually begin to tuck down, at least in the United States, as long as the Mideast is at full throttle. But the Mideast is a funny animal. I mean, they're pumping oil today. Tomorrow you could be in full-fledged war in Mideast. So I don't know how bearish you really want to be when you got oil prices down at these levels.
Right. So I was looking at the monthly continuation chart just for fun. And the last time we were this low, and I guess I'd call it a spike low, but we dropped pretty precipitously. That would have been in December of 2008. And then, of course, we're down here again. I don't know whether there are cycles in the oil market or not. I suspect they may operate differently than some of the rest of the commodities, but at least something to think about and something to watch over time. Now, turn your attention directly to the grains and the oil seeds. Corn had a pretty good day today, finished 5.5 cents higher. You wanted to close higher in the beans. You got one, but not much, just a penny and a half or so, or a couple of cents along those lines. Better than losing, I suppose, on the day.
Yeah, corn has actually had a good week, or 5 or 6 days. If you look at your lead futures, corn futures, we clearly busted above the 1,500-day moving averages here today, and the 50-day did cross over above the 100. So a lot of your moving average type traders are probably going to take a look at adding long positions or begin to build some long positions if that follows through or holds above that as we finish out the week and on into early next week. Now, some of my early indicators that I watch, they went long here about 3 weeks ago. So I've been kind of friendly the corn market since then, and I think the market is in position to have to probably stay firm as we go on into next week, and then I think the market might want to take a breather during Christmas week, but I do think the momentum is definitely to the upside.
Hey, thanks, Dan. Dan Zwicker, of course, is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas, joins us on this Thursday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Coming up, more on the agricultural news and a really good discussion about the weather forecast with Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. In today's agricultural news, the ethanol industry is proposing to the Environmental Protection Agency a possible way out of a legal battle over the agency's recent reduction in renewable fuels targets. The Renewable Fuels Association and the automotive industry are both asking EPA to slightly lower the volatility required for conventional summertime gasoline. It's a move that would skirt EPA's reluctance to extend the current E15 volatility waiver to E15 and higher ethanol blends. Jeff Cooper with the Renewable Fuels Association says it might also be a way to skirt a potential lawsuit over the EPA's recent cut to RFS targets for conventional and cellulosic ethanol.
I think there is a likelihood that this is a solution that they see benefit in and, you know, would help us both, I think, move forward. They're certainly more open to this idea than the concept of extending the waiver to E15. They've told us repeatedly for the last 5 years they don't have the authority or really the interest in doing that.
Cooper argues lowering conventional gases' volatility and therefore that of higher ethanol blends overcomes retailers' objections to selling those blends. Cooper explains what retailers are saying.
We don't want to offer a fuel that we can only sell for 8 or 9 months of the year. And they don't want to dedicate tank storage space and dispensers to a seasonal fuel. So, you know, correcting this, and that's all because of this volatility issue, and correcting this volatility regulation issue would allow that fuel to be sold year-round, and we think would really open the door to broader use of E15, which would have the effect of helping us meet the RFS.
Cooper says it's pretty likely the oil industry will complain that a volatility change could raise gas prices, but he counters that a recent RFA study says it cost less than a penny a gallon to do so, and that could be offset by allowing blending more ethanol, which generally is cheaper than gasoline at the wholesale level. Let's stay with ethanol. Amid financial turmoil, Abengoa shut down 2 ethanol plants in Kansas. The Wichita Eagle reports the company shut down one of the plants 2 weeks ago. The Spanish company, with operations worldwide, filed for legal protection last month because of heavy debts At the time, a plant employee at one of the facilities said it was closed for seasonal maintenance. However, it has not reopened at the cost of 20 jobs. The company also closed down its cellulosic ethanol plant in Kansas, which opened about a year ago. However, the 45 employees are expected to be welcomed back in the spring after the so-called down season. The company said publicly after its filing that its ethanol plants would continue to operate. Biomass Magazine reported last week that roughly 30 employees remained in the company's U.S. corporate office in St. Louis. CHS had filed a lawsuit last month against Abengoa before its filing for protection. The lawsuit alleges that Abengoa failed to pay nearly $4.9 million for corn delivered to the plants in Kansas and Nebraska during September and October. And finally today, merger talks. Merger talks are advancing between Dow Chemical and DuPont Company. The Wall Street Journal reports each have a market capitalization of about $60 billion and could announce a merger in coming days. The merger would be followed by a three-way breakup of the combined company. Dow's chief executive, Andrew Leveris, is expected to be executive chairman of the new company, with DuPont CEO Edward Breen keeping that title. That deal would face antitrust regulators' approval, of course. If it went through, the deal will combine two of the top suppliers of industrial and agricultural chemicals and crop seeds. Last month, the Wall Street Journal reported that DuPont was discussing a potential combination of its agricultural division with seed giant Syngenta and separately exploring a potential agricultural deal with Dow. Monsanto earlier this year abandoned a $46 billion bid for Syngenta amid resistance from the Swiss company. One other quick item that's not quite ag news, but you should know about. USDA tomorrow is expected to release selected tables from its upcoming USDA Agricultural Projections to 2025 report. USDA will post online tables containing long-term supply, use, and price projections to 2025 for major crops and livestock products, and will include supporting U.S. and international macroeconomic assumptions. USDA will release the complete agricultural projections to 2025 report in February of 2016. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 10th day of December, a Thursday afternoon. We're joined by Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois, to look at the growing regions around the planet. I'd like to start in South America. We know the El Nino has an impact, not always on parts of South America, but I suspect there are some things afoot there that we probably ought to discuss. What do you see?
Well, we're certainly seeing some of the initial impacts of the El Nino that's taking place at the moment. Now, we can measure how strong the El Nino is by measuring water temperatures across the Pacific Ocean every month. And the National Weather Service has been doing this since January of 1950. The latest observation for November just arrived, and it turns out that it's the highest recorded number on record. So what that means is that we're essentially looking at what may be the strongest El Nino to be measured. So we won't know for sure for a couple of months because we have to look at a longer period than just 1 month at a time. But nonetheless, that's pretty unusual, and we can't say with confidence now that the water temperatures in the equatorial Pacific Ocean are currently the warmest relative to normal in 66 years of record. Now, all that being said, we're starting to see those impacts in Brazil, and we have been seeing them for a little while. If you start on November 1st and go through this morning, it's been the wettest since at least 2002 across southern Brazil and in Paraguay as well. This includes some of the main corn and soybean areas of both countries. So if rain can be too much, it might be too much, especially when you look at the forecast going forward. We essentially have the jet stream stuck across the same region of Brazil, and that's sending cool front after cool front after cool front into the same area. We'll see more and more rain as we go forward, and we're looking for rainfall totals of around 3 to 6 inches across this region over the next 10 days. That's around 150% to 300% of normal, which is basically telling you that you have the same weather pattern that's been taking place over the last 6 weeks continuing. So you put all this together, it's probably too wet in southern Brazil and in Paraguay. It'll take some time to see how that affects their corn and soybeans, but I imagine that there are some farmers down there that probably are saying that they don't want any more rain.
I would think that would be the case. As it happens, Mike, I was listening back this morning for some things that I'm preparing for the holiday period to an interview that you and I did the first week of July. We were talking about this same topic, except for Corn Belt regions, and you reminded producers then that when you looked back historically, there were some times that we had not great yields in such conditions, but only if it continued to rain in the months of July and August. But otherwise, we might have actually very good yields in some cases. I know you may not have the same kind of access to data in South America, but do you think the same could hold true there if they begin to have more normal rainfall?
Well, it's hard to say. One of the problems you have whenever you look at South America production, especially in Brazil, is that we don't have a real long history of weather or of yield. If you go back in time, you have to remember that there was a huge expansion in soybean production areas over the last 10 to 20 years. So if you go back just 20 years ago and look at how much rain there was, you know, there might not have been too many soybeans in that area as of today. So it's a little bit more challenging to correlate weather to yield in that region. Another issue is that they just have a lot of rain at different times of the year. So it just gets real tricky to start putting all the big picture together. And keep in mind, too, when we start talking about how much rain there was in Brazil, there's gigantic spaces between what we know and what we don't know. If you look at the state of Mato Grosso in Brazil, for example, we have about six or seven good weather observation stations that exist across that state. That state is much larger than Texas, and they have soybeans grown throughout most of it. So try to imagine if you were trying to figure out how wet or dry it was in Texas, but you only had four or five weather observations for the entire state. Obviously, there would be huge gaps in your data. We do have satellite technology, which can help us to try and estimate how much rain there was across different areas that's available to us now. But that technology is pretty new, too. We've only had that for maybe 3, 4, or 5 years. And the correlations between what that shows and what actually gets produced at the corn and soybean level don't always match very well in the very small data sets that we have. So these are some of the problems that you start to run into in that region. And there's a number of other ones, too. This is just kind of the tip of the iceberg.
And finally, why don't we come back here to the United States? Because the rain has been falling in the Corn Belt, and it's been pretty persistent.
Well, keep in mind that in the El Nino of December through February of 1982-83, in which the current El Nino just likely displaced to become a little bit stronger than that one, December of 1982 across the Corn Belt was the wettest in 121 years of record. So this pattern we're seeing right now is not all that dissimilar to what happened in the El Nino of 1982. Additionally, the winter of 1982-83 and of 1997-98, for that matter, keep in mind this El Nino we're in now is most comparable to those two. Both winters in 82-83 and 97-98 were much warmer than normal. Look out your window today. Exactly what we're seeing now is what we would expect to see. And if we go back in time to September of this year, and we come all the way up to the point that we're at right now, we're in the midst of the number three warmest period for that period in 121 years of record. If you combine that with what is most likely to be a continuation of warmth over the next 3 to 4 months, you can make some pretty strong arguments that September through February of 2015-16 will end up being number one, two, or three warmest across the Corn Belt in 121 years of record.
Mike, thank you so much for taking so much time with us today to explain El Nino and its impact on the Western Hemisphere. I do appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd. You have a great afternoon.
That's Mike Tenora of T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. Hear him again on our website at willag.org. I'll be back in 2 minutes. We'll talk with Matt Bennett of Channel Seeds.
It's National Lager Day. Lager yeast seems to have emerged during the Roman Empire, and its production faced almost immediate opposition from established brewers and the Roman Catholic Church. Private lager brewers were required to produce their beer outside city walls. On this day in agricultural history in 1864, Henry Rowell Schoolcraft died, an American explorer. He is noted for his discovery of the source of the Mississippi River in a lake in northern Minnesota, which he named Lake Itasca. Schoolcraft published an account of the journey in a narrative journal of travels through the northwestern regions to the sources of the Mississippi River. In 1855, Henry Ridley was born. An English botanist, he was largely responsible for establishing the rubber industry. His experiments convinced him of the enormous economic potential of rubber as a plantation crop. His principal contribution was to develop what is still today the basic method for tapping the tree, the removal at each tapping of a thin layer of bark from the end cut, thus permitting a smooth flow of latex and allowing the bark to regenerate. And in 1877, Dr. Jared Kirtland died. A physician, naturalist, botanist, and teacher, he is credited with developing 26 varieties of cherries and 6 varieties of pears. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Thursday afternoon. Matt Bennett is here. He's with Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Thanks, Matt, for being with us. Tell me about your view of the marketplace at this time.
Well, I think after yesterday's report, you know, obviously there wasn't a whole lot of information that came out. Generally not a real big market mover. It's a pretty good sign to come in here on Thursday and be able to see the markets move solidly higher like they did. I think, you know, export sales were pretty decent, but whenever you look closely, I mean, we really didn't show a whole lot more sales on corn than what's necessary to meet the USDA goal, but certainly it's moving in the right way.
Moving in the right direction, but how much pressure will come from the outside markets? I'm thinking that crude making new lows might not be good, especially as it pertains to ethanol. Its use, while that's mandated, won't be above that mandate, I wouldn't think, very much.
Well, you sure wouldn't think so. You know, whenever you look at what's gone on in the last 6 weeks, you know, you could tell that you can make an argument that they should have made the adjustment even higher. But then whenever you stop and look at the crude oil argument, I totally agree with you that if crude oil stays depressed, it's going to be pretty tough for these guys to be able to turn the kind of profits, especially once they get out of their contracts, both on both the input and the output side. So I think we ought to keep a pretty close eye on the crude oil market. And, you know, overall demand is probably not going to be overly robust on corn. I think that if we could just end up where the USDA is, it'd be a good thing.
What does your basis look like in the area?
Yeah, our basis has been pretty strong. It's backed off just a shade, depending on where you look, because a lot of guys have had to bid up to originate some of the bushels they wanted to get. But, you know, for this time of year, with the size of crop that we had overall in the U.S., especially on the heels of the record crop that we had last year, I can't imagine basis being much better.
And for soybeans, what's your take on that market?
Well, whenever you look at the bean market, you know, I'm not too surprised it's having a hard time rallying. You know, yesterday we really didn't change anything. We know that the world supply is quite big. We know that, you know, Brazil could have quite a few weather problems and still come up with a heck of a big crop. And so, you know, from a supply standpoint, unless we get into a major weather issue, yeah, I don't really see soybeans being able to move a lot higher. I think with both corn and beans, seasonally, it's not surprising to see them trending just a little bit higher here in December. But I don't want producers to get fooled. I think that the soybean markets offered a lot of opportunities, especially going into the weekend last week, to get a lot of these soybean sales caught up on.
Hey, Matt, thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Matt Bennett, of course, is with Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois.
agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.